Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Episode of New Cyber Frontier. I am here broadcasting from the Secure Set Academy. They are so nice to provide us a place for a studio here, so we always want to thank them. And our guest today, Dr. Andy Heo.
Thanks.
A local legend.
Yeah, local legend, right.
But definitely some experience on your side. We were talking before the show started here about your background a little bit, but give us, you know, 2 or 3 minutes about how you got to be where you're at. We always want to know something personal about somebody. How
they
started. What's your background?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, my parents wanted me to be a doctor, so I actually graduated with a biochem degree a long time ago. This is what I started with, and then joining the Air Force. The Air Force tells you where to go, so they had me go be in the communications field. And communications was wide back then. Radio frequency type stuff, spectrum analysis, and IT obviously was involved in that. So actually my first job in the Air Force was 4 September 2001. I showed up at my first Air Force base 1 week before 9/11, and I was working on the B-2 bomber at the time and the communication systems there. Sometime around like 2005, 2006, the Air Force decided, you know, we're gonna make all of our comm guys and gals, we're gonna turn them into cyber people. And I would say 70%, 80% of the field were like, what's cyber? You know, is it, that's just a computer, right? And it was so much more. We're talking about operations. We're actually talking about delivering effects to a warfighter, you know, actually being able to shut down something if we needed to be. And that was only a concept at the time. So, you know, I've been in the cyber operations field legitimately for about 12 to 13 years. You know, I had two jobs ago as I was working in the Air Force Reserves. You know, we had a job where we were legitimately hacking our own space satellites to see, you know, what kind of vulnerabilities.
See if we could, right?
Yeah, just to see if we could. Because if we could, certainly another adversarial nation could do it as well. So and I spent 4 years doing that, delivering results to, you know, the four-star general at Air Force Space Command. And, you know, as space guys, they always thought they were impenetrable. Mm-hmm. We are operating, we're so far ahead of everyone in space, why would anyone even be able to touch us? And, you know, the argument we would bring in as the nerds there, we say, you know, the other adversarial nations are not catching up to us in air, ground, sea, and space, not because they're getting better in those domains. It's because they're getting better in the cyberspace domain. And so
getting the information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you said biology?
Yeah, biology. I was a biochem guy. I was trying to go be a pediatrician.
You know, in the Air Force.
In
that
the Air
was
Force,
your,
yeah.
Your thought. So have you, this is just mind-boggling, have you used any of that in the cyber arena?
So it's interesting. So I actually spent a few more years dawdling in that field. Even though I was in the Air Force working on communications, I actually got my master's in epidemiology, which is kind of the study of disease and how it spreads.
Uh-huh.
And that actually translated very well towards once I started.
To viruses and
yes,
stuff?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
There's a lot of concepts that are very similar between a live biological organism and how, you know, something like Stuxnet would spread.
Right? Uh-huh.
There's a lot of modalities that are very similar.
I have never heard of that particular like focus on cyber to say, you know, I can look at this as a biological organism.
Absolutely.
That spreads like a disease, like
yeah,
a germ.
Yeah, there's a ton of quantitative, qualitative type studies out there that you can apply in terms of infection rate, make prediction analysis on what's going to get infected next. So, you know, for a little while, there was a little merging, you know.
So have you done any like systems engineering to apply those to the spread of
so
computer
yes,
viruses?
Yes, so actually we've worked on a little bit on some machine learning and AI, we'll call them programs for lack of a better word at this time, that are using similar types of concepts that we would see in like the medical IT realm,
uh-huh.
that study any type of epidemiological type of studies.
Interesting.
That can be applied to perhaps more towards like a worm versus a virus, something that's actually self-crawling and trying to mull its way around particular systems.
That's interesting. You know, I kind of connected two fields that weren't. I wrote a book on self-help from the perspective of software design and how much the human brain operates like computer programmers, how we program and how we engineer stuff. But those two career fields are so separate that the people in each side don't talk to each other.
Well, we're seeing more stuff with AI, and they're all modeled based on neurons, really.
Yeah.
So isn't there a logical connection between the two, between the biological realm and the electronic IT engineering realm? I would think
it's
so.
It's so fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be. Well, let's take a break. We'll come right back after we hear from our...
Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Cyber Frontier. We are here podcasting from SecureSet Academy. They are so nice to let us use their facility for our studio here with Dr. Andy Hio from Infinity Technology Systems, right?
ITS, yes.
ITS. And he's going to talk about that in a little bit, but we just kind of got into his background and so fascinated that connection between some biology and, you know, the computer arts and engineering.
Yeah, absolutely.
And things that people don't connect sometimes are the most valuable insight when people take two opposite areas of study and bring them together.
You know, it's what's funny to me is, so I talked a little bit about my other life as a completely separate realm of college basketball referee, right? And we're seeing so much big data being applied to sports these days. That blows my mind. Just the other day I was reading something.
You mean other than like gambling and
certainly gambling is part of it too, I'm sure. But, with sports and, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, which side or what part of the field a batter hits the ball X percentage of the time. I mean, it's crazy how much data analytics has really just propagated across everything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, into the sporting
realm. So it's like the center fielder gets a heads up. This guy's coming to bat.
Right.
90% of the time he hits the U, get ready, move up 10 feet.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Ah, wow.
Yeah, data analytics, insane. And it's something that's worth an inspection, certainly.
Yeah, wow. So we usually talk about, this has been a great sidebar, what are the industry issues that you either see or trying to resolve? And you had a great one that we really wanted to dive into, and it really connects to this psychology, to this cross-field pollinization of different studies, where you work and have a lot of ideas about engaging Gen Z.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what that problem entails and how you would define it.
So, you know, regularly we talk all the time in conferences, and you hear it from any type of CXO type level person, a senior leader, and they talk about capabilities and wanting to develop personnel. And really what the crux of the problem is the two R's, right? Retraining or retention and recruitment, right? So let's talk about those two things. Recruitment of personnel, trying to get these Gen Z, Zennial type people into this career field. And, you know, I come here to SecureSet regularly. You know, every cohort I come and talk to them about specifically soft skills, right? What's it going to take for them to get a job in this career field? Because quite literally, the last cohort I had, I looked at some of the resumes, three of them that had no experience with cyber, which is fine, totally okay. They're learning something. And then the one particular individual, his whole life before he came here to SecureSet, and I'm propping up SecureSet, and they do a good job, was a subway manager. That's all he did. And nothing wrong with that at all. It's just he wanted to do something different. And he's trying to talk about recruiting these people and providing them incentives, but you know, a lot of the work that I see on the government side, I mean, you have to have a clearance, and they want certifications, right? So the government many times leverages certifications as the be all end all, right? Mm-hmm. And you may have seen it on LinkedIn as well. It's just people with
eight, nine
certifications by their name.
And right? I like that. I steal a phrase from The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. When everybody's super, no one will
right.
be.
Right. Yeah.
So and I've seen the credentials be hot before.
Right.
Back in the early 2000s, you had to have a software certification for what languages you were on.
Right.
And everybody had to race and get them. How many could you have? Whoops. Everybody was. What is that God there? Everybody was on a race to get them.
Yep.
How many you had? What? And then you couldn't give them away after.
Oh, absolutely.
2 years.
Right.
So when everybody had 10, and you know, I go back to probably, and I'll say it was 2013, 2014. I had CISSP certification back then. And I had people in the security industry ask me why I have sissy after my name.
Mm-hmm.
They had no idea what it meant.
Wow. Yeah, and that's interesting to me. You know, in my new position as chief cybersecurity engineer, you know, obviously CISSP is important, but they want me to have the ISAP shred, the architecture shred.
Uh-huh.
And they're like touting it, like, oh, you know, only if you look on the ISC2 website, they have maybe 1,600 in the United States with that certification.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, wow, you know, you'll be very specialized in that. And I'm like,
well, you have that PhD.
Right.
That's kind of that specialization.
Yeah, that's kind
too,
of
right?
important too, right? But you can't have this job unless you have the ISAP. And I've looked and did the research on this, and it's like, is anyone really even taking this shred? Because the only person who cares about it is the government right now, right? They just want to know that you're, and there's the thing is what we're talking about is practical experience, right? And you know, with these the Secure Set students, I always talk to them about practical experience. You know, I feel that cyberspace, anything that has to do with this type of field, is a passion industry, right?
Yeah.
You have to love it. There's some jobs you can do that you don't love, and you do it because, okay, I need to pay bills, with that, and that's okay. We're just trying to get further into our lives. This is a passion industry, and you have to immerse yourself in this because it is consistently changing while you're sleeping, mm-hmm. while you're working on something else. There's something new coming on board. So when we talk about that piece of recruitment, we want to make it appealing to this particular generation, right? Because we talked a little bit before, maybe the stereotype is that lack of attention span. And I don't believe that to be the case. I think it's you have to give them something that's enthralling, something that's...
Something to believe in.
Yeah.
They will believe in the mission. Something to be passionate about. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and creating that is kind of your retention plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting. So tell some ways how you do that.
Well, I think, again, you know, people are, especially in this generation, I believe... They will put in 14, 15 hours if they believe in the craft that they're trying to hone.
Right? A day, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not during the
week. A month. There we go.
And I've seen it. Yeah, it might be during odd hours. You know, maybe they're not working a traditional 9-to-5 shift. But maybe that's a paradigm we need to start looking at, too, is that...
Yeah. I mean, that's what the entrepreneurial companies bring. There's right. people that are interested in startups. It's that thrill that... I might get something later.
Right.
I contributed to something. Right. I can say when I'm 50, I did this. Even if it failed,
yeah.
I went through this time and put myself behind something.
Yeah, because that's something that's never changed over generations, is that people learn from failures. Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we give them benefits such as, okay, you can wear casual clothes. You know, you can wear jeans. And that's nice. That's great and all. But if you give them something that's they can be passionate about, that they can feel part of, they will give you everything.
You know what, my son, who is younger, kind of that Gen Z or even mm-hmm. beyond, I don't know what they, you know, there's names for them now, he actually likes to dress up. He's like, I love wearing a suit.
Right.
I like how people treat me.
Yeah. Yeah, like a professional, right?
Yeah.
Imagine that. Yeah, so, you know, and we're talking about that type of stuff, and, you know, in some cases, you know, pay may not be the main motivator for this generation.
Uh-huh.
If you can give them something that's tangible that they can work on and they have a passion for.
You know, I heard it, one of our professors did a special on, you know, talking about Gen Z, and he said the reason why pay is not important, they watched their parents go through losing their 401k, losing the value in their house.
Right.
And they see that everything that was intrinsic the whole time they were growing up has deteriorated away.
Yeah.
And it's like, Yeah, when you get that, when you see what they've been through, you understand why they have that impression.
Mm-hmm. We talked about our kids, but my daughter, she values experiences much more than she values her possessions.
Yeah.
You know, her possessions, I mean, it could be a $400 pair of Beats headphones, and she's just like, yeah, that's nice. She values the experiences. And so mm-hmm. I think that's critical towards recruitment and retention.
So making that in your company, triggering those human driving forces that are so important to this generation. That is an amazing. Give us some thoughts about how you're engaging that, how you're doing it.
Yeah, so we spoke a little bit before as well, is that, you know, I think what we're seeing from, let's call it 20 years ago to about 10 years ago, is that we are hiring people in the industry based off of their expertise in one particular thing, right? Okay, mm-hmm. this guy's a Unix guy. That's all he does is Unix, Unix, Unix.
You know what? I'm going to stop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
We're going to go hear from our sponsors, and you're going to have to wait to come back to hear the response of this.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
New Cyber Frontier, on with Dr. Andy Hio, and he was about to tell us the secret to living, the secret of life according to keeping and retention of Gen Zers. Go ahead, finish where you were going with
the
that.
The answer is always 42, right? So, but what we were talking about before is that, you know, 20 to 10 years ago, they were hiring people based off of specialties, right? They could do Unix real well. They could do Linux and whatever it was, particular things were important at the time. And then we went through a period, you know, from about 10 years ago to maybe now still, where we're hiring people who are a mile in width and very little bit in depth, right? They knew a little bit about everything. And so what I continue to see in, you know, the last two or three organizations that I've been in and in some of the nonprofits that I work with is that we're losing the expertise in realms, right? So we'll get to working on a project and everyone knows a little bit just to be dangerous, but not enough to be lethal, right? So they have to come in and we have to go find a person who knows how to do, you know, X,
that specific thing.
Yeah, X specific task. And that can be cumbersome. You lose time. You're losing extra money because you never hired right in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so strategically, what we're trying to look at is fostering experts, right? Find someone who is an expert in one thing. And guess what? That just doesn't go back to the Zennials and the Gen Zs. We can teach old dogs new tricks. There's a ton of people who are above the age of 40 who are training into something new with cyberspace operations, whether that's RMF type stuff, risk management framework stuff. They get those concepts. And again, this is something that actually applies across all generations. Like when we go back to making it important for them, right? Mm-hmm. And helping them understand that. We can send everyone to go get certifications, Security Plus, A Plus, whatever, and that fills a square. Great. Well, we're looking
checkbox.
Yeah.
It says that they all know the same terminology is what
correct.
What I've heard that really the best way to explain that.
Yeah.
But now that we got a lot of people knowing the same terminology, mm-hmm. we've got some schools that pump them out.
Yeah.
We need more expertise in particular areas.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And so that's where I find a major deficiency these days.
Uh-huh.
I've been in Colorado Springs now for about a little over 10 years, and you know, I work the nonprofit scene and go do guest speaking and talk to the people all over the United States
mm-hmm.
at, you know, conferences, you know, San Diego, Baltimore, so on and so forth. And I hear the consistent theme, you know, is that I hear a lot of discussions and which is, you know, at a baseline level, and it would make sense to a lay person. But when you're talking about expert stuff and getting into the tech head nerddom, so, it's got to be there.
So question, the expertise, do you have some areas that are needed? Or is this something that I can't train somebody to be an expert. They have to have passion in the area, as we talked about before, to make themselves an expert. Yeah. Which is it?
I think it's, I would say, a little bit of both, but I would more lean towards, it's hard to make someone who's a passion in the administrative part of cyber, right? That gets cumbersome, just looking at a screen all the time, one zeros across your bleeps and squeaks and so on and so forth, right? Someone, especially if I would define it as cyberspace operations, we're talking about people who actually want to be on console, you know, furiously tapping away until the CPU starts smoking, and they're...
So that's the expertise, right, you need. So is that like cyber hunting, like network forensics? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Advanced level stuff. I mean, stuff that you show a demo off, and you know, I'm a government guy, stuff that you would show a general, and there would be smoke coming from their ears because they're like, what is this?
So now... I hear it a lot. We actually talked this morning to SANS Institute, and hacking, training, you know, competitions, you know.
Right.
Does that give you this? Is that the training they need? Or is it because, and I hear a lot of people say the opposite, well, if somebody wrote a game, a gamification of it, a hacking environment, that... It's something that's already known. The hacker needs to be trained to do the things that are unknown.
Right.
Does that training work, or is it something else?
I think it does work. It's a good starting point. You know, certainly when you see competition, I'm a big proponent of competitions for the high school level, because then I have a good baseline. I go observe these competitions quite often to see where they're baselined at. We know there's tons of kids out there who are virtually script kiddies, right? They're just copy and paste from whatever dark
website, exactly,
that they found, and they're like, oh, this is kind of cool, and without actually knowing what the, you know, tertiary effects are of what they've implemented. So knowing the baseline, you know, I've gone and spoke to high school STEM clubs as well to try and put my thumb on, you know, what's the temperature of these people, and there's a lot of kids interested in this stuff. And so really in most other occupations you may pick off five or six of the top ones and say, you're going to be it. We got to take all 100 of them and grow them all at the same time, right? This is, you know, I compare a lot of things to sports, but this is like a minor league, or you're a major league franchise, and you don't have much money to buy high-priced free agents. You need to grow from the minors then, you know, and you grow your farm system and continue to build them up until they're ready for the prime time. So I think consistently engaging and making sure that your team is consistently, I'm a big advocate of the agile model, right? We're always pumping stuff out day after day. There's a consistent engagement. You know, I don't do weekly activity reports. We do it daily. Let me know what you've accomplished yesterday, because each day should be better than the day before. And if there's a if there's a fault, that's okay. We learn from that. That's still better than the day before.
So another question in that training, the pipeline, because back in my days of troubleshooting, problem finding, industrial equipment, factory stuff, my boss would send me the newest guy to train all the time because I was good at it. He's like, we want to have more people good at it. And I found that most people didn't have the base pieces to be able to start them. And I was like, wow, it was more of a rarity that I found somebody that I could train. You could tell somebody how to just reproduce what you did, but to actually have the intuition seemed to be more of a talent than a trainable skill. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that's interesting, because I actually did a little bit of, that's kind of a deviation of my dissertation, is that, you know, we did a select study and of senior leaders versus junior people, understanding capability. The seniors, like the senior leaders would basically say, yeah, we definitely have this capability. Whereas the junior people are like, well, you don't really have that capability because you haven't provided us the right level of training. One of the things that I talk about here with the SecureSec guys in, is in that same vein, right? Things are different now. The game has changed. There used to be the IT guy. The model I use is you could, you know, shove a tray of food underneath the door. You hear some munching and they're just tapping away in the background. But the cyber guy has to go sit in the boardroom. And they have to go talk to the CXO. They have to be a front-facing person and understand not just the IT aspect of it, but they have to understand how that relates to the total corporate business operation. And also they have to fight for funding too, right? Which IT guys have never had to do. The only times people would talk to IT guys was when something broke. right? Mm-hmm. Why is this not working? Why don't
when
I?
Their password is locked them out, or something.
Or even farther back, right? Why is my telephone not working, right? So on and so forth. But now they have to sit in that boardroom and talk about multi-million, multi-billion-dollar budgets and fight for funding with the main business operation, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that may be. And so that's what they have to understand. Like for here, for like students at SecureSet, is you're now a front-facing guy. You can't hide anymore.
And you know what? I teach at Colorado Tech, so mm-hmm. Same thing. I like to take the entry-level class because I get IT, computer science, engineering, criminal justice, business. I get them all.
Right.
And I like to say, you know, we're all looking at cybersecurity from a different direction.
Yeah.
It's like if you're underneath the car looking up, it looks different than if you're looking down at it, and different than if you're inside of it, and different than if you open the hood. Everybody has a different angle, but you're looking at the same animal.
Yeah. For a long time, you probably remember this too, they used to call the CISO the CISNO, right?
Cybersecurity puts the no in innovation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, and you know, models are changing now. You gotta be able to show that face now.
And that's that's what I do a lot in blockchain.
Right.
That's what I really like about kind of this evolving ability to package and sell cybersecurity mm-hmm. in bite-sized pieces.
Yep.
It puts a business model, a return on investment in cybersecurity instead of just a no. And I like that thinking of things in the opposite way, because you're right, so many times cybersecurity has just been that negative feeling. You walk in the room, you can hear people stop talking about what they're talking about.
Oh yeah, and many times I've been in business meetings where basically whatever fault is with the system is blamed on cybersecurity immediately, and then I get through like any type of case analysis, I'm like, this has nothing to do with us whatsoever. They're just blaming it on us because no one else knows what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and that's part of being the front facing is like, time out guys, I'm strong enough here to actually stand up for us and say, no mas.
So teach them to be front facing, give them a purpose. I like your approach to engaging Gen Zers and working on what's the next generation.
Yeah.
Anything kind of in wrapping up here that we can say that you need help with, that you want to put out, things you have coming on in the future, any calls to action you have with your company?
Well, you know, I certainly say that cyberspace leadership is a growing thing. We're still learning how to do that because, again, the IT guy from years before was never put in charge of things. Right? You say, okay, well, you're head of the department, but you don't have a seat at the boardroom. You sit on the outside chairs, right? Mm-hmm. And you speak when you're spoken to. So I think the current trend now is to see when we see leaders that are doing cybersecurity, cyber defense, which is, I hate using the word cybersecurity now because really it's more of an active thing. It's cyber defense mm-hmm. to me. We have to be more active leaders, and we have to recognize talent quickly. We have to have a keen eye for that talent and then foster them, help them however they need, provide them with actual tangible resources, whether that's money, whether that's training, so on and so forth, so they can be the next person who replaces us in our seat.
Right? Yeah, and I heard a good thing is get a seat at the table.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be involved in this as a cybersecurity guy, don't sit in the back of the conference room.
Right.
Go sit at the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get everybody to know your face, take your place, and be assertive, because that's what's needed.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that we have to be, the IT guys stereotypically introvert, right? I'm not saying we have to go stand on a table and say, pay attention to me, but assertive is probably the best word.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And look forward to hearing the podcast later.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. We've been talking to Dr. Andy Hio, and this is New Cyber Frontier podcasting from the SecureSet Academy, where they're so nice to give us a studio space here. And thanks a lot for joining today. The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea If you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.